If you're excited about us talking about PharmaCare, and if you have a reliance on some type of pharmaceutical drug, I would love for you to give me your feedback as we're going along talking about this. Because sometimes when you have problems in the system, the tendency of governments is to say, okay, well, let's blow the whole thing up and create something brand new from scratch. And that seems to be the approach the federal government is inclined to take. But my next guest says, that may not be the best approach. Maybe we can just fill in the gaps and we can get to the same end. I'm joined now by Dr. Brett Skinner, who is CEO of the Canadian Health Policy Institute. He wrote this to the Financial Post, and it was, "Don't blow up PharmaCare as we know it. Just fill in the gaps." You can check this out for yourself if you want to have a look at it. And he joins me now to talk about it. Brett, thanks so much for being with me.
Glad to be here.
I gave you the honorific doctor, but now I'm wondering, are you a doctor or are you just the CEO here? My apologies if I introduced you wrong.
I'm a doctor of the PhD type.
Okay, good. So let's then talk about the National PharmaCare Program, because I thought initially when this was being talked about and proposed, the notion behind it was every province has their own formulary and their own purchases, and we would be able to benefit from getting bulk discounts if they all work together to buy their drugs in common so that we could just negotiate best prices. That's what I thought that the National PharmaCare Program was supposed to be about. What is it actually turned into? What is it that the federal government's proposing?
Well, it's blown up into this grand scheme for one size fits all, universal, publicly funded single payer program, either subsidized or directly managed by the federal government. Most advocates of universal PharmaCare prefer for the universality to be run by the federal government level, and for the provinces to surrender sort of their jurisdictional autonomy in this area. But in terms of the scale, it's really a national program and scale.
What I always wonder about when federal government wants to step in is, do they have any expertise at currently managing a PharmaCare program? It seems to me all of the health care expertise resides in provincial health ministries. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit.
Yeah, most of it does. The federal government runs something called the Non-Insured Health Benefits Program, which is a drug plan that mainly covers indigenous Aboriginal peoples. About 800,000 to a million people and are either directly benefiting from the program or are eligible to benefit from that program. So they have some involvement in running a drug plan, but of course the province's drug plans are I've been around much longer and in places like Ontario and Quebec and Alberta and BC tend to be much larger populations being managed by those programs. And as you say, the constitutional jurisdiction for health care, legislating and regulating health care, belongs with the provinces.
Are they? Is there something that you could build on, though, with that non-insured health benefits program? Is it a good model? Is it working well for most people who are covered by it? Does it make sense to default to that model?
Well, the point of the article that I wrote was to say, why would we blow up the system we have now that is working fine on its own? So it's not whether the federal government could manage these programs as well as the provinces are managing them. The question is, would that be better than our current system, which is a mix of public sector drug plans covering about one-third of the population and private sector drug plans obtained mostly through employment benefits covering about 23 million Canadians? And people who are privately insured in Canada currently have much better access to new medicines than people who are currently insured under public drug plans. And the concern is that if we move to a one-size-fits-all system, then 23 million Canadians are going to be asked to give up the superior benefits they now enjoy and accept the inferior benefits provided by a Apollo drug plan.
So I guess maybe that's probably gets to the rationale of why it is they're proposing a universal plan. Because if you take the same kind of approach that they have with the Canada Health Act and hospital services, they don't want there to be any difference in the level of coverage that you get from one place to the next. They don't want to have private care that's better than public care. I think the notion is that you can bring the public care up to the same standard as the private care, but you seem to be skeptical. Why is that so hard to do?
Well, I don't know if it's so hard to do. It's just that the public plans have failed to do it. 94% of all private plans have what's called an open formulary, which means that all new drugs that have been approved as safe and effective by Health Canada are automatically covered. The best public drug plan in the country is Quebec's RAMQ, and that public drug plan covers only one-third of all new drugs approved by Health Canada. You know, we're talking major differences in access to new innovative drugs across private versus public drug plans. And so the question is, do we do better under a universal program than we do now under our pluralistic system, which is a mix of public plus private drug plans plus safety net programs to cover those folks who fall between the gaps?
So why would governments, having had drug companies go through all of the effort of getting their approvals for the brand name drugs, it would seem like it would be obvious that the government would be the first one to say, yes, we're going to approve that? Because especially when you look at some of the unique drugs that are extraordinarily expensive to treat rare diseases, we're often looking for government to step in to help fund that anyway. So it seems like it's in the reverse. It almost seems like you'd expect the private plans to try to control costs by not listing everything and the public plans to be more generous and comprehensive and cover everything. And why is it backwards?
Well, we experience exactly the same thing on the Medicare side. The public system tends to ration access to high-tech diagnostic devices and specialist physician care services, high-tech surgeries, high-tech medicines, and so on. So we see the same thing in the pharmaceutical side as we see in the general health side.
Okay, let me take a pause because I want to find out what you think would be the solution instead. If taking it over, and you've given some good arguments for why it shouldn't be taken over by the federal government, if that isn't the best solution, how do you then solve this problem? Because if Quebec is covering one-third and other provinces are covering less, you're going to have gaps. How do you deal with the diagnosis of rare diseases and the expensive drugs associated with that? How do you deal with people who don't get private coverage? I think that's where there's still problems that exist in the status quo system. So we're going to hear from Dr. Brett Skinner, CEO of Canadian Health Policy Institute, about a different way to fill the gap. If you've got some thoughts, 403-974-8255. You can also text 630-630, and we'll be right back on Chorus Radio. I am hearing some feedback from people who have experienced exactly what my guest is talking about. So Amanda says, I'm glad you're tackling pharmacare. I came from Ontario. Their publicly funded formulary covers around 4,400 meds. Not sure offhand what Alberta is. This sounds like a lot until you realize private plans typically cover 11,000 to 12,000 medications. Single payer has the potential to reduce availability for tons of meds as it may not be economical for insurance companies to continue covering uncommon drugs if they cannot provide the common ones more because of the single payer plan. Well, that's an interesting thought, is that even if you do end up with a private plan and it only covers the things that the government won't cover, they're not able to have the volume on the regularly prescribed items, and so they may start reducing their coverage too. Hadn't considered it. Continuing on, it's another way to, I'm currently taking a medication that costs $250,000 per year. It's covered by my private insurance. The government has reviewed a medication, which is very beneficial, great life-changing for me. She's got cystic fibrosis and has been rejected as a publicly paid medication on their formulary three times via their long-term care plans. The new list they would come up with for single-payer pharmacare would likely not include this medication, jeopardizing my access. This is why I'm concerned about the plan they have rather than fill the gaps and blow up private coverage. And another person here says, watch this. It's another way to get higher income Albertans to subsidize Ontario and Quebec, the added bonus of the first steps to federalize health care systems. Liberals equal bigger government. I paid as much as $30,000 a year for my daughter's medication. I have two drug plans, and I still think this is a bad idea. All federal programs take a disproportionate amount of money from Alberta and distribute across Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes. So that's why they think that the federal government is pursuing it. And it's true, they do have an aging population in Quebec. But interestingly, Quebec covers more drugs than the other formularies do. So Brett Skinner is going to help walk us through what the actual solution would be. Some of you have incredibly high health care cost needs when it comes down to pharmaceuticals. The two people we heard from said, I still don't want to have a federal plan. And Brett Skinner is the CEO of the Canadian Health Policy Institute. So let's talk about this. I mean, that is one of the issues, is that you've got some people who get diagnosed with a drug that requires $250,000, sometimes even $1 million a year in drug costs, and they have to appeal to the media to get it covered. So what would be the solution to that part of the problem? How can you address that with a filling in the gap type of approach? What do you recommend, Brett?
Well, Canadian Health Policy Institute did some research on various options that were being considered by the Advisory Council on the implementation of national pharmacare. I found that a fill the gaps approach would cost about one third to one quarter as much as it was being estimated the cost of a universal program. PBO, Parliamentary Budget Officer, estimated a universal program to be about $20 billion. We estimated that to get all the provinces to come up to the RAMQ level, Quebec Public Drug Plan formulary list, would cost about $2.6 billion in additional spending at the federal level to subsidize that. And for all those plans, including Quebec, to come up to the level of the private sector, will be an additional $2.6 billion. So in total, $5.2 billion in total would close the existing gap caused by formulary exclusions, and would be one quarter to one third as much of the cost of the federal government, assuming all of the expenditure of the public drug plans that exist now, plus the private sector.
Now, that sounds like it makes some sense. So what kind of effort, I mean, is the government open to hearing the argument? Do you think that's likely to succeed?
Well, the council indicated very strongly that it considered all other options, but only as stepping stones to an eventual universal single-payer public plan. So they didn't give a fair shake to the other options. They didn't really consider the contrary evidence, and they really were not seriously considering alternative options, anything short of universal single-payer public pharmacare, and they just were completely dismissing. So it's going to take some political will. But there's 23 million Canadians who are going to be badly affected by a universal plan replacing their existing benefits obtained through the private drug plans they currently have. And it's almost 14 million Canadians who are paying most of the income tax in this country that are also another constituency that's going to get hurt by having the cost burden of assuming formerly private paid costs and putting that on the backs of taxpayers. So there's two large constituencies in the country that will hopefully be considered by politicians during the next election.
Is it that insurance companies are asking for this? I often wonder whether or not they want to offload costs because the cost of drugs are escalating at such a rate that maybe they want to focus on other avenues of business. Is there some sort of private industry interest in getting out of this field and they want to offload it on government?
When it comes to the patented medicines, which is usually the source of the complaint of high prices or high costs for drugs, spending on patented medicines really represents only about 6.9% of total health spending across the country. And private insurers spend more on dental, or as much mm-hmm. on dental, as they do on patented medicines. And dental expenditures tend to grow faster over time than patented drugs have grown. So, no, I think they have a business interest in the market for drug insurance benefits as part of their overall extended health benefits offerings. So it's not being driven by that. But it is being driven by ideology, I think, a preference for one-size-fits-all government programs to replace private benefits. And you hear these arguments about a patchwork system where things are different across the country and there's hundreds of plans instead of a single plan. And somehow it's presented as a negative. In fact, I think if you were to compare the performance of that system versus the alternative, it's actually a positive thing that we have a pluralistic model now.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how this debate goes.